If I was to put a title to this talk, it would be Work, God's Gift to Us. When I was first married, I worked at a company called Aladdin, and I was a route driver, and we delivered uniforms and linens and floor mats. And each quarter we would have competitions and sales and upselling. And I won a couple of those awards. And this particular award, I got some commission from what I sold. I got a gift card to, I think, Tercy's. And I got a little plaque that said, "Attitude is everything." And I was going to bring that little plaque and show it to you, give you proof that I had this plaque. But ironically, I think one day I was throwing a temper tantrum and I threw something and it hit it and broke it. So I'm not exactly sure where it's at. My dad's biggest phrase when I was in high school and college was, "You need an attitude adjustment." What? I do not need an attitude adjustment. And right now I'm in the middle of an attitude adjustment. And I'm trying to find my way through the attitude adjustment. A few weeks ago, I served a fella's lawn whose name is Kelly Dirks. I met him at Four Mile Elementary. His son, Zach, was in Brady's grade. Great guy. Always a nice man. Wife, nice woman. A few years back, he was diagnosed with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. The last couple of times I had been to his house, he would always come out and say hi to me. And each time I noticed something else was different about him. This spring, I went to his house, and he didn't even come outside. I noticed they had a new van, one of those vans where it has a lift and the wheelchair goes in it. And I started reflecting about that. Here was once a strong man, a provider for his family, and he now has a disease that doesn't allow him to move his body, but his mind is as sharp as a tack. And I had previously been complaining about how many pills I have to take in order to get my knees and hips to work. And roughly, I don't really start getting my body into shape until about 9 o'clock in the morning. And I said to myself, I bet he would do just about anything to be able to go back to work. What am I griping about? Eight years ago today, it would have been very difficult for me to have communicated this speech to you because my jaw would have been wired shut. I don't know how many of you remember that, but I had broke my jaw in an incident. And after my jaw was healed, my cast came off, we as a family decided to go to the Black Hills. As a fun thing to do, kind of a little reward for persevering through such things. As time passes, that vacation becomes the most memorable vacation for me. Lately, I've been thinking about standing at Wall Drug looking at all of these pictures of the pioneers before me. Looking at them, looking in their eyes, looking at their face, what they were wearing, what they were standing by. The men were skin and bones. You could see every bone in their face. They were wrinkled. Their hands looked like they were made of leather. There were no smiles. And I don't think it was because they weren't happy. I would assume it was because dental practices weren't what they are today. There was pictures of them standing in front of sod houses and shacks. Can you imagine living in a sod house? I have to spray around my house every 2 weeks because I can't stand the bugs. How many bugs would be in a sod house? They worked to survive. Everything they did had purpose for their survival. There was no saving up in a 401k. There was no SEP plan. There was no individual IRAs. There was no disability insurance. There was no nursing homes. There was no nursing home insurance. These people worked to survive, and they used their whole body. And when they died, there was nothing left of them to give anymore. Today, work is something completely different than it used to be. It seems that we work for the weekend. It seems that we work for our retirement. It seems that maybe we work for our hobby. Maybe we work to be a means to get to what we want to do. It's an ability for us to take advantage of our selfish ambition. This winter, I packed on a lot of extra work because I was proudful. Because I knew that I was going to find an employee this year. I knew the secret of finding good help that nobody else had figured out. This was a real eye-opener for me. The first guy I got a hold of, we went up to Old Chicago in Ankeny, and we started talking and kind of get to know him, see if he's kind of the guy I want. And his questions were like, well, what kind of benefits you got? What's your benefit package? Do I have to work weekends? My man, this guy ain't for me. I'm just a small business. I can't even afford insurance for myself. I go to the VA. The second guy I called, I said, we're going to meet at Hy-Vee on Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. Let's have breakfast. Buy you some breakfast. We'll sit down. We'll talk. See what's going on. Saw some of my friends who also own business there. They had meetings and they were doing business things with their friends or employees or whoever they were trying to strike a deal with. Then they saw me and I was pretty embarrassed because my interview didn't show up. So I called him about 8:30, no answer. Hey man, I'm going to be here at Hy-Vee for a couple more minutes. Just want to make sure you remembered about the interview. So I left eventually. 5 o'clock that night, I get a text from the guy. Oh, hey man, got your voicemail. Sorry, I left my phone at home. Went to the Women's March with my wife. Ooh, yeah. The third one, man, I was desperate. He just said, hey, can I have a job? Yeah, come on. Be here at 7 o'clock, we'll go. Last day he was with me, I could tell he was getting tired.
The work I do is very demanding. I walk all day. I push a little cart that's full of 50 pounds, uphills, downhills. This time of year, I'm pulling a hose that's 300 foot long that has water in it, and I don't know how many gallons of water would be in that hose, and you got all the resistance. Anyway, enough about me crying. It's hard work. It's demanding work. I could see the guy wasn't used to it, and I said, you know, I'll tell you what. If you fill out the invoice, you blow the fertilizer off the sidewalk and driveway, and I'll fertilize the lawn. I'll do the hard part. You do the easy part. All right, man. Get done. This fertilizer is still on the ground. There's no posting sign in the corner of the lawn. Invoice isn't at the door. Come around. Wow. Sleeping in my truck. There was a man here in town. His name is Clay Willie. He used to own a restaurant over here called Willie's. And Clay Willie. Used to be called Clay's. I remember his advice. I don't remember his name. He said to me, Kelly, the worst thing you can do is talk to an employee when you're angry. So I didn't talk to him at all on the ride home, but he got a call. And he was on the phone trying to work out the weekend plans. And it was Thursday. And he was under the impression that he wasn't going to have to come to work tomorrow because in the forecast there was rain. I'm like, this is weird. This is really weird. So, needless to say, he's not working for me today. But you know, as a child, I always thought working was a curse. You know, when you go to Genesis chapter 2, what was the curse that God gave Adam? That you'd have to toil and work hard, pull weeds. I used to think working was the curse, but that's not the curse. I'm sorry, that was in chapter 3 where he gave down that curse. He gave down that thing to Adam. And we find in chapter 2 that God had given Adam work. And it was joyful work to tend the garden. So as I look at it, work is not a curse. Work is a gift. We find this in Ecclesiastes 5:19. Every man also, whom God has given riches and wealth, and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. We are to rejoice in our labor. We are to be happy that we have work. It is a gift from God. From the beginning, God has expected us to work. And as I mentioned before, I picture for Adam, in the beginning, work was joyful for him. But after the sin, he had to fight the feelings of work being burdensome. And if you've ever pulled weeds in a garden, you know what I'm talking about. It's burdensome, it's monotonous, and 2 days later, they're sprouting and you gotta pull them again. I think somewhere along the line we got convinced that work is painful and not joyful. As a kid, I can remember watching the Jetsons. And I vividly remember, and I don't know why, but I vividly remember this one time, George Jetson comes home from work, and he looks beat, and he's slouched over. He goes, man, these 10-hour work weeks are killing me.
work is a useful tool for God. Work is a useful tool for God. Think about it for a minute. Just take a minute or a few seconds. It may not take very long. But who are the people you respect? What do they do? Chances are you respect a person because of their work ethic. Do you respect an evangelist? Why? Because that evangelist is working hard, digging into the Word day after day. He's doing something I could never do. I would never, ever want to have my nose in a book all day long. I like to work my back. I like to use my arms. I like to be outside. We respect those who work hard at whatever it is that they do. Proverbs 12 and 11. Those who work the land will have abundant food, but those who chase worthless pursuits have no sense. Do we respect those who follow worthless pursuits? I don't think I do. I don't think I hang around people that follow worthless pursuits. Do we respect those people who start a task and never finish it? Do we respect a person who is consistently following after quick, rich schemes? We respect those people who are committed to the cause, whatever that cause may be. In our work environment, we respect those people who are committed to the cause. We respect those people who put in the time, who work hard. We respect those people that see the project through, start to finish. That's hard to do. Because halfway through, sometimes a quarter of the way through, you want to give up and say, man, that's too hard. I don't want to do that no more. Most people quit right before the good stuff starts happening. We respect those people who keep their nose to the grindstone. We respect those people who keep their word. We respect those people who do what they say they're going to do, and they care. Because I thought I was going to get an employee, I took a job that I never should have taken. It's in Glen Oaks. I don't know how many of you remember Gary Kirk, one of the people of Kirk Van Orsdale. I don't even know how big this mansion is. It's incredible. But anyway, he doesn't live there anymore. And the house sat empty for a couple of years. And I decided that I would help this guy with his fountains and his pond and waterfall and irrigation. Man, it's been a nightmare. But every time the homeowner calls, hey, the fountain's not working, I'm there, lickety-split. And I was talking to Mary the other day, and she goes, you know, I really appreciate you coming out all the time, Kelly. I can tell you care. It's so hard for us to find anybody to take care of anything in this house for us. But you're always there. And we really do appreciate that. That kind of stuff goes a long, long way. Let's move to a biblical example. The Apostle Paul. A lot of us like the Apostle Paul. We respect what he's done. We see what he's done. And what was the Apostle Paul? He was a tent maker, right? Well, this is what the Apostle Paul writes in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, 6 through 8. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we command you, brothers and sisters, to keep away from every believer who is idle and disruptive, and do not live according to the teaching you live according to the teaching you receive from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example. For we were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's food without paying for it. On the contrary, we worked night and day, laboring and toiling, so that we wouldn't be a burden to you. Paul worked night and day, tirelessly, worked his fingers to the bone, and then he went and preached. When did Paul take a vacation? When did Paul come home and go, man, I just need to sit in my easy chair and watch some TV and veg for a little bit? He didn't do it. That's not how things were done then. Paul toiled day and night. Why? Because he didn't want to be a burden. Because he wanted to show the example of how you were supposed to work. Can you imagine? I mean, just think about this for a minute. What kind of a tent would Paul have made? Would it be amazing? Was every I dotted? Every T crossed? I bet every stitch looked the same. And if there were tassels, I bet every tassel, it was beautifully ornate and everything was cut uniformly. I bet it was an amazing tent. I bet everybody said, hey Paul, will you make me a tent? This is how Paul gained respect. Through his work. People respected Paul in his work. Yeah, I'm sure when he came to the community, they were a little skeptical of him. Probably didn't like him a whole lot. But when they saw his hard work ethic, when they saw his attention to detail, they probably respected him a little more. Is that how that works at your job, in your office, where you work? I know it did for me. Wherever I worked and I saw the man who was working hard, I respected that guy and I listened to him because he knew what he was talking about. Paul went into a community and built respect through hard work, by keeping his word, by not calling in sick, by not having an excuse for everything, by not slacking off. I know this is impossible to actually do, to be on point every single day. But I bet Paul was on point more days than days that he wasn't. I bet Paul's mind was there as much as it could be, because that gave him respect, and that opened a door. And this work ethic really might be one of the reasons why a lot of us consider Paul to be our favorite apostle, because of his hard work, his attention to detail, to see a project through from start to finish. He ran the race to the finish line. He didn't get 3/4 of a mile down the road and go, man, this hill's too tall. I ain't going to climb that thing. He kept going. That's the kind of behavior people respect. And even though the Bible does not address it, I would like to think all the apostles acted in this manner, where their work was done to such detail that when they went into a city, they were respected. And it would be really hard to be respected as a tax collector. Here in Thessalonians chapter 2, or 2 Thessalonians, what I just read to you, I think is what gives teeth to what he writes in Colossians 3 and 23. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward, it is the Lord Christ you are serving. I fall into this trap all the time. This is where I need my attitude adjustment. Working on a weekend, seeing 6, 10, 12 Harleys go by. Man, I wish I had a job where I could afford a Harley and a weekend. I'd love to go riding. Seeing a dad playing ball with his kid. Man, I wish I didn't have to work so much. I'd like to go out there and play some ball with the kid. We all have these problems where we want to serve ourselves. But I need to remember what I'm doing. As I'm working for the Lord, I'm trying to build some respect in the community. That when people ask the questions, what makes Kelly so special? Then that might open a door for me. Most people, if they had done what I did, got a whole bunch of work lined up, couldn't find an employee, what would they do? They'd call somebody up and say, hey, you know that agreement we came on with? I can't do it no more. They'd break their agreement. I've made some mistakes because I was kind of busy. Evidently, I didn't blow out a water main properly at this guy's house. And I went to open up his irrigation system. And his main line was broke. And so when you turn on the water, it just keeps flowing and flood his lawn. About 50 foot of 1-inch PVC I had to dig up. It was about a foot in the ground. And you have to be careful because the signal wires to all the valves go in there, is because if you take your shovel too hard in there, you cut the signal wires, then you cause yourself some more problems. But you know, most people would say, hey, you know what? I think that's something you did. I think maybe you had a plumber or something in your basement, they opened a water valve, shouldn't have done that. You know, this ain't my fault. So they tell the customer that they've got to pay for it. Or even better yet, they'll sound better and say, oh, you know what? I'll take care of the parts if you take care of the labor. Now, this was my fault. I made this mistake. I owned it. And it's these kinds of things that have given me over 370 customers. And I'm a one-man show. Because people are craving to have somebody who cares about something that they do. This is the door that is open for you. This is the gift of God that He has given for you to follow the call, to preach the word, to show why you are what you are. Both of my teachers are missing. But I wish I would have had Julian as my English teacher, and I wish I would have had Mark as my science teacher. Because I know they're working for the Lord. I wish I had something to ship. Because I would have Bob and Don drive the truck to wherever it needed to go. I bought a dump bed off of Larry Brady. Because I knew it was going to be built right. If I needed some dirt work done, I'm calling Dave. because I know he's going to do it right. And he's going to treat me fair. And if he makes a mistake, he's going to come back and fix it. These are all attributes that people respect. And it gives us an opportunity to tell others why we do what we do. I stayed on my soapbox a little too long, so I'm going to rush through the rest of this. I'm sorry for going over. But in Luke chapter 12, we find the parable of the rich fool. And the question before the parable, which gets Jesus talking about it, is a guy saying, Jesus, tell my brother to split my inheritance with me. And Jesus says, don't be greedy. Stop being greedy. And then he goes into the parable of the farmer who had so much grain, he tore down his barns, built new barns, put grain in them. And he said, ah, look at this. Look at all this grain. I can live for years. I can kick back, I can chill, I can sip on lemonade, I don't have to do nothing. And God said, you fool. I'm taking your life tonight. What's the meaning of that? I believe one of the meanings is this. As long as there is breath in your lungs, you have an opportunity to work. It may not be the same work that you used to do, but there's always work to do for the Lord. And this man who built the new barns was taking all that money for himself, and he wasn't helping God's people. He was greedy. I kind of learned that lesson when I watch Audrey Brady. How long in her retirement did she go do the Lord's work and visit somebody? Give somebody a kind word. How old is Betty Warren? And you still get a birthday card from her? And they used to be homemade. You just can't stop working. Solomon tells his kids in Proverbs chapter 6:6 to consider the ant. The ant continually works. The ant doesn't take any time off. They diligently work and they mind their own business. As I mentioned before, I'm going through an attitude adjustment. My attitude was, I'm crying because my knees hurt, crying because my hips hurt, I'm crying because I have so much stuff to do. Those are selfish things. But what I really need to remember is that this work is a gift from God, and it gives me an opportunity to touch someone's life outside of this building for the good. For the good. To be an example to my wife. To be an example to my children. The example of when the going gets tough, you just keep on going. You don't quit. You don't stop. That was the second award I got from Aladdin. Perseverance. With that, I'm going to leave you with James chapter 5:11. As you know, we consider blessed to those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. If there's anyone here today who is outside of the Lord's compassion and mercy, we're going to give you that opportunity to come forward as we stand and sing, that you may also be partakers of God's compassion and mercy.